Welcome, Knicks fans, to another episode of the Worldwide Knicks Podcast. Full house today to just engage in revelry, to get excited about a very great weekend. Probably the best Knicks weekend in two decades, to be honest, as a in the playoffs, if you're a Knicks fan. So full house today. Omar here, Rafa here, Alex here, and we have our man DP from Knicks Twitter joining us. So I want to welcome our guest first and foremost, DP. Welcome to the pod.
Thank you. Appreciate you guys having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, so if you guys are on Twitter and on Knicks Twitter specifically, DP's kind of been all on creating these videos, kind of reacting, telling the fans to calm down. They're a must watch for me anytime I'm on Twitter. That's for sure. So a pleasure to have you on. I do like to ask our guests first just to kind of get a good idea of, you know, your background with the team. You know, how did you become a fan of the Knicks, and yeah, you know, how far back does that go?
Thanks again for having me. It goes, I'm born in 1982. I turned 40 last year, so I grew up on the mid 90s Knicks. I really struggled with Josh Hart wearing number three, I'm not gonna lie, but he's been wearing it very well. But to me, there's, you know, one number three in Starks, and I love those guys. I didn't have MSG growing up as a kid, so those NBA and NBC games, you know, Knicks Bulls, Knicks anyone that was on there was really my initial introduction. And as a kid growing up in New York, which, you know, I know at least half of us on this pod is not the case for, you know, you like pulled up the Post or Newsday every day and it was like Anthony Mason throws person through a window at a bar, or like, you know, Charles Oakley ejected again, and I'm this, you know, young kid up these guys. And it was great. It was a lot of fun. So that's how I got into it. And when I, 2006, I guess, so it was a few years into my professional career in the city, I got very inexpensive season tickets. They were section 336. So this is, there were three bowls at the time, right? It was before the conversion. And I was literally going to games by myself. I could not get a friend. I could not give them away. And so, you know, 16 years later, I've still been there, and it's different now. It's great.
And you were at the games this weekend, right?
Yeah, I was at both games this weekend. I actually left Sunday's game at halftime. I don't want to derail the pod here. My son got sick during the game, so he went home, and, you know, he's fine now, which is all good. But it's just funny, like, you know, how priorities change, right? Like, this is like the biggest moment in my life. My son's sick. It's a pretty easy decision after we began. But I will say this, I've been very restrained all day. I don't want people to feel bad, but I feel like I've been kind of baited into this a little bit. Friday and Sunday were not the same game. Friday night was insane. It was 8:30 at night. Every single person was, you know, drunk or fired up before they even got there. And Sunday, the Knicks City kids dancers were there, and it was great. I mean, it was a good atmosphere. To be fair, I left before the end, and the end on TV sounded much crazier than the beginning. But there's nothing like playing basketball. Nothing.
Just David, last time I was in New York, I went to a Friday night game and then a Sunday matinee game. And I mean, I know it wasn't the playoffs, but you're right. The difference was night and day. Do you know, it was totally Friday night. There's nothing like Friday night next games. So the Garden. So yeah,
I'll tell you what, guys, it doesn't matter how, by Garden standards, it's still better than it is in that shit show in Cleveland. So, you know, 100%. Right. So let's dive into the series, man. So actually last week, all three of us kind of predicted what would happen pretty accurately. We all said that they would drop a game two in Cleveland, which they did, got basically run off the floor, and then, you know, take care of home court at the Garden, and they did that as well with flying colors. So the Knicks take a 3-1 series lead, commanding 3-1 series lead over the Cavs, 95% of series that go there, end with that team up 3-1 winning that series. So I guess DP, will start off with you on this one. Is the series over?
I don't want to say the series is over, but I feel like the series is over. I mean, we've won six of the last seven games against them. And, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen in game three. I was very nervous going to game three, but I was pretty confident going into game four. It's like, It reminded me a lot of when Tibbs finally benched Elf. Like, all year, everyone wanted it. I was pretty neutral because I'm a Tibbs guy, so I justified it. But, you know, finally, like, he went to he did it, right? Like, that was the move, and it worked. We got the game to win, and then we got run off the floor the rest of the series. Like, that was our big adjustment, and it could have worked, and it just didn't for us. Mm-hmm. Same sort of thing. They bench Shakuro. They bring in LeVert. They get that win. And then if you struggle again, which is what happened, it's like, what do you do now, right? Like, so we haven't yet had to pull that major adjustment, which is great that I think we still have that in our back pocket. Hopefully we'll never need it. But they did that. So what is he telling the team in the locker room now? What's the next big adjustment? So if the Cavs win, I'll be scared again. But right now I'm pretty confident.
Let me follow up with that real quick. What do you think? If the Knicks had a quote-unquote big adjustment, what would that adjustment be?
That's a great question. I didn't know. I still don't know. But based on Grimes getting hurt, it made me think, prior to him getting hurt, that that could be the adjustment, right? Assuming he was continuing to struggle. His defense was good, but not making shots. And I think Deuce doesn't play, which I'm generally okay with because he's limited on the offensive end. But if Grimes isn't going to score, you know, so I could see them moving Harden, moving Deuce into more minutes and reducing Grimes. I would see that as a potential next move. Never in a million years did I expect Obi to play 12 minutes in a fourth quarter playoff game, but I don't think that was a planned adjustment. I think that's just something that happened, and I'm glad it happened, but I'm not counting that as my adjustment bucket,
right.
So to speak.
Oh, yeah.
Alex, what you got?
I would just say it was going to be hard that the adjustment we made is last Rundle minutes. I think it's the last thing. Well, the last thing would be last Brunson minutes, but the second to last would be last Randle minutes. So, yeah.
It's been amazing the turnaround and the kind of Tibbs kind of narratives these last few games. Yeah, exactly. Some of the main criticisms he's had, you know, you can't develop players. You know, we've got all these young guys that are balling out right now. You know, he's not a playoff coach. And as soon as he starts getting results in the playoffs, then the narrative's changed completely, you know, and can't make adjustments. He's made amazing adjustments. He's hardly put a foot wrong, I don't think, in all four games. I think game two was as much to do with, you know, the Cavs just got hot and, you know, they made good adjustments themselves. You know, I don't think Tibbs made any huge mistakes game two. I think game three, they just couldn't handle MSG. They couldn't handle the pressure and they just folded. And game four, you know, as a Cavs fan, you've got to see a reaction from your team. I thought that they were so poor in game four, especially from their bigs. You know, you're getting Allen playing 40 minutes and getting four rebounds. You know, Mobley played a bit better, but he obviously fouled out. He was getting a lot of pressure on him. I think Tibbs has played a fantastic series, and I'd say he's put some of the things to bed that he's been, you know, hit over the head with for so long. So I'm not sure he's still the long-term coach for New York. You know, maybe Johnny Bryant's going to, you know, slide in there at some point. David, we've been talking all year about, you know, the potential for Tibbs to maybe move upstairs into a kind of, you know, front office role or some kind of sort of presidential role or whatever, overseeing the training or scouting or something like that, you know, keeping him in the organization in some kind of way. And then just kind of bringing Johnny Bryant through in time, maybe not this summer, maybe next summer. I think that's the probably the long term goal for it. But been so impressed by him, and just so happy for him, because I think some of the criticism he's had since he's got here has, been really unfair. Just given his record in New York and, you know, in his career, you know, he's a winning coach. He's a solid coach. He's exactly probably what we needed. And I kind of, we just needed that steady hand, you know, experienced hand to come in. I'm not sure a kind of young up and coming coach was quite what we needed in New York. Somebody that could handle the pressure in New York.
Yeah. Look, I've seen Larry Brown, Lenny Wilkins, Phil Jackson, Mike Ditka. We've seen a lot of some Hall of Fame coaches, lots of vets, Derek Fisher, Jeff Hornacek. It didn't work for anybody. So what Tibbs, and it's not like Tibbs inherited a good team. So what Tibbs did to me, I'm with you 100%. It was all unfair because on one hand, it's like Leon Rose is sleeping and there's not enough talent on this team and we're not contenders. And then the other hand, it's like Tibbs isn't a championship coach. It's like, all right, but we don't have a championship roster, right? So we're just trying to kind of level set here. And people just choose whichever side of their mouth, you know, kind of fits their story. I think you guys are right, potentially, about him moving upstairs. But, like, he was supposed to be fired, apparently, a few different times during the season. How do you move him upstairs in, like, that sort of setting? So I agree with you. I think that's something that happened in the summer. And I think it could have happened in the summer. I do not think that anymore. But it'll be interesting to see if Brian gets any interview, takes any interviews or not, because if he doesn't, I think that's a pretty good indication. His reputation is so good. So if he doesn't get interviews or take interviews, pretty good indication that he has a promise, I think, that he's going to take over this team one day. Otherwise, why would he not? Presumably, he wants to be a head coach, right? Why would he not even interview somewhere? So we'll see.
Well, he wasn't really considered properly for the Utah job, wasn't it? Maybe that was a maybe that was a sign that, you know, the Knicks just said quietly, you know, he's our man going forward. So, you know, that's why they went elsewhere.
And the amount of times that players talked about him and still do about him, they talk about him, the whole he helps in some way. So it makes me believe he's the next coach. But if we're a new young team and we're developing it, well, it looks like we're going to the second round. So it will put the pressure on Johnny Bryant because obviously first round lost to the Hawks, then we missed playoffs. Second round, well, you want more. You don't want to the first year with Johnny Bryant do worse or continue to do worse. So he puts pressure in because if the players keep developing, they keep getting better. Grimes, quickly, RJ, everyone keeps getting better. And we look at the playoffs as a must and as a must to improve. Because we talked about how this season would be good to be in the playoffs, would be a success if we reach the second round. And it looks like we're doing it. So it is a success this season, especially with all the drama against with not getting Donovan Mitchell. And now everybody says it was a good thing the Knicks didn't get Donovan Mitchell because we're beating the team he went to and we didn't give up everyone. So it's kind of weird how the narratives change. And it's, all because of one man, Jalen Brunson, because he's been tearing it up the league. He's, I don't know what time it is that if he's the most improved player or not. I don't know if he gets the award. I really don't care. If he gets none of everything and keeps playing better and better, I don't mind. But yeah, I mean, getting to Tibbs, I think he's been out coaching Bickerstaff like tremendously, like blow out every game. Game two was a game that they had to be that aggressive, and the Knicks just said, yeah, we're not going into this level of aggressiveness. We get injured. Randall's not 100%. People are already trashing him, but I don't care. He's not 100%. I believe that. Hart was supposedly injured, but he's okay going 48 minutes. Josh Hart is my favorite Nick now, you know, of everyone. And I mean, I'm talking about adjustments. I think the biggest adjustment we made is very simple. Using the players in our rotation, we are able to adjust to what the Cavs defense brings us. The traps they were using on Jalen Brunson, they're much weaker now because we're setting screens with our guards. It's Grimes or Hart and RJ Barrett. Quickly was in when he's there. They're setting screens. Stronger screens than Mitchell Robinson, which is surprising, but they're setting the screens there, and it's different having Evan Mobley and Okoro or whoever's guarding Brunson with the arms up than having Donovan Mitchell and Okoro, for example. Let's keep it that way. So it's different, and especially that these last two games of RJ Barrett improving and being able to give that option to Jalen Brunson. Okay, if I don't have the move right here, I'll give it to you, and I know you can finish. And then that's the big adjustment made, was getting RJ Barrett going. which is super important, especially with less than 100% Julius Randle.
Rafa, just to say, Brunson's third favorite for most improved. Markkanen and SGA are well out in front. So
I feel like that's SGA's award to lose, to be honest. Yeah. You know, he elevated into another stratosphere this year. And, you know, not taking away anything from Markkanen or from JB, but, you know, SGA, I feel like he's kind of cemented himself as the guy who's going to win that award. It's a weird award anyway, MIP. Yeah. You know, you never know what the actual classification is. You know, is it just somebody who gets a bunch of usage? Is it somebody who elevates their tier? Is it somebody that gets a little bit better stats but contributes to winning? People have won the award in all three of those circumstances. You know, it's kind of weird. So
who's improved the best on the Celtics roster? That's generally who wins it. So we're probably going to win it.
There you go.
You know, Brunson's been the underdog his entire life. That's the kind of guy, respectfully, I don't want him to get the award, right? It's like just like another sort of like fuel of the fire of being overlooked. You
exactly.
Know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And plus, he already has the fuel from not being named an all-star this year. Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah, it fits into the MO, to your point. You know, when I look at what's transpired here, guys, it's a lot of what the Knicks have done. I think Tibbs has kind of pitched a nearly perfect game, to be honest, as far as coaching and just the managing of his rotations and his adjustments, like you guys have all mentioned. Before the series started, my whole thing was, you know, RJ's going to swing this series one way or another. If he plays well and is effective, then they're going to win games. If he isn't, then they're going to lose games. And sure enough, the last two games, he's erupted. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit more about him later, but he's looked great and the team has been winning. And, you know, Cleveland has kind of been exposed as being pretty limited. You know, Isaac Okoro can't hit shots. That's why they've kind of fade off of him defensively. Caris LeVert is streaky. He had a couple of shots in game three, I think. A couple moments where you thought that he was doing something, but ultimately he can't be relied on in that way. So if Garland and Mitchell don't have it going, like Mitchell did not have it going yesterday in the second half, that team's done because Mobley's still very awkward, clumsy offensively. He's going to be really good, just not this year. And, you know, Bickerstaff and all he just hasn't, like you said earlier, he kind of used his big move early and it hasn't really panned out. So I hate to sound overly confident and say, yes, the series is over, but it surely feels that way, guys. You know, it really does feel like we're at a point where this series is nearing its conclusion. It's really a matter of, is it over in 5, 6, or 7? Hopefully it doesn't get to a game 7 because you never know what's going to happen there. You're hoping that they could close them out at the very latest in game 6 at the Garden. But I kind of wanted to shift over here to Julius a bit. He's not had a good series. You know, there's no way around it. He had a good first half in game 1. And since then, it's been bad shooting. The defense just wasn't there yesterday. And you guys already mentioned he was benched in the fourth quarter in favor of Obi Toppin, which was, of course, the right move. Obi was infinitely more effective than Julius had been. So, DP, I guess, do you think this is all just to go with the injury stuff, or is there something deeper at play?
I don't know. I don't know. I defended Julius a lot. Similar to the Tibbs thing, like the two, I kind of tie the two of them together a little bit. And they've just sort of elevated the base of this team. So I generally give him a pass, but he's not been good. He's been far from good. And obviously he was pathetic in the first playoffs. This is a very different team. He has a lot more help now, but you know, it's like, maybe Rafa was expecting RJ to do this the last couple of games. I don't know, but I think for many people were pleasantly surprised and, you know, it only appears like there's help because there's help. I think a lot of people thought IQ was going to have a great playoffs, right? He's done nothing, right? So, like, you know, on one hand, Randle has a lot more help than he had last time. And I think it's illustrated by the fact that we're up 3-1 with him playing like crap, right? So it's a much better team. On the other hand, like the fact that Mobley, like we could tease, right, that Randle's a bull and Mobley shouldn't be defensive player of the year, but he was a potential defensive player of the year and they don't even trust him to go one-on-one against Randle, who won't even try to drive past him and is taking contested shots, and they're still having Allen totally shade over to him. So I think it's not really fair to underestimate how much easier it is for everyone else when Randle's on the court offensively. I do think that gets canceled out if he's not playing defense, You know, and so that's the part that bothers me a lot more than him being inefficient. So, you know, we'll see. I think Obi, despite the fact that it seemed like an easy decision for us, it still was a very hard decision for Tibbs. So kudos to Tibbs for doing it. I really hope we win in five, six, like the Knick game. If it goes to game six on some weird way, I'd like it to go to game six so I could be there, whatever. But you want to win in five. You want the Milwaukee Heat series to go seven. And I want to see Julius tell me he's healthy and have a good game one of the second round and put this to bed. And if he struggles in that round two, it is what it is. But like you guys saw what happened at the end of game two. Forget coming back from the ankle. He had that horrible fall at the end of game two. So I don't know. I'm not ready to say he's choking or any of that stuff. What I will say is his body language is more composed. I kind of want him to be a psychopath. Like, I know people got mad at him when he yelled at IQ and getting technicals, whatever, but like that's how he plays, right? He's like, and now he's just kind of, even that the block he had against Mitchell was like no emotion. The N one on the play, I think we're either right before that when he ended up shooting with his right hand, no emotion. Like, I want to see some fire out of him moving forward. But I don't know, man. I want to give a polarizing take. I don't know what to think, but the Cavs don't want him on the court. I can tell you that because their defense is, they're literally playing two men on a hurt guy. So I can't give him too much crap.
Too much meditating, I think. You know, he's trying to get that kind of fire out of him, and it's maybe gone too much the other way. But I think we were discussing, I think yesterday, David, about, you know, maybe the injuries affecting him more than, you know, than we think. And from what Tibbs said after the game, he possibly was kind of hinting at that as well, that, you know, he's trying to play through something. And I think, it's, you know, once you take into account that heavy fall after the at the end of game two, then I mean, he has every reason to be playing, still feeling the effects of that. So maybe he's just one of those stubborn players that just always wants to play, never wants to get taken out. And sometimes he has to have the decision taken away from him. And as you know, many people have said, and we've already said tonight, that kudos to Tibbs to kind of step in and make that decision for him. We were going back and forth about the, you know, the media thing yesterday. I don't think we really agreed, me and Omar anyway. And I was saying, you know, I think maybe the better thing would have been for him just to come out and just say, look, I don't want to talk about it. You know, I didn't play well. You know, I don't want us to take away from the rest of the team. You know, the team were amazing, stepped up, et cetera, et cetera. You know, whereas Omar was thinking more, you know, maybe it was best just to get himself away from there, you know, not make himself the story. And I was thinking back to remember that the RJ buzzer beater against the Celtics, where, you know, the press conference afterwards was all about thumbs down and, you know, talking about, you know, Randall's body language. And, you know, at one point you were like, well, what about that RJ buzzer beater? Do you know, when is anybody going to talk about that? So maybe there's some situations where maybe the team stepped in and just said, look, sit this one out. And, you know, let's just make it all about the rest of the guys. So, I'm kind of torn as to what the right thing to have done was. They probably would have been criticized either way. So it's a hard one. But, I would have liked to have just seen him step in and just say something, you know, about the rest of the team and how they've stepped up. So
can I just add to that real quick? I also would have liked that. But it doesn't matter what you and I would like, right? The question is, does the team care or not? Do the players care or not? And I don't know that answer, by the way, but that to me is more of the question than what the fans wanted. What I would say, as my understanding of actual facts, is that the team didn't make him available. To your point, like the stubborn guy, big personality, I'm going to play when I'm hurt. I'm sure if he really wanted to do the post game, he could have said to them, I know you're not making me available, but please put me up there. Like I'm sure he could have overcome that, but the news was that they told him not to. And you also saw him, well, Oh, well, we were all watching the end of the game on TV because I left early. You heard Mark Jackson talk about how unique it was that he was cheering on his teammates. He was the first person on the court to give everyone a high five before he very quickly walked off the court. He didn't linger, but he was the first person on the court to give them high fives. And Alan Hahn reported today that he saw him after the game and he was in good spirits. It's like, you know, at some point we have to separate what we want as fans from the reality of the situation. And I don't have enough inside information to make that determination, but like, the team is resilient. They truly seem to like it, right? Like, Obi's always celebrating him. There seems to be no animosity. Like, I don't know. I don't think it's a big deal. And one more thing on why I'm convinced this is my biggest evidence that he likely is hurt, although I don't know. They're not even attempting to get him going. They're doing nothing new. The Knicks seem to be content with him just staying on the outside and keeping Mobley away. Like, and he's going to shoot if he's out there because he's Julius Randle and he's going to shoot. But he's more or less playing like a decoy, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, if they felt he was healthy, they would be trying to get him going. They're not even attempting to get him going. They're calling no plays for him. They have no downhill action. It's, you know, so I think they're all happy that he's kind of jogging up and down the court.
Yeah, what I was going to say ties up into that because, well, with two things you said, David, because you mentioned that he has a lot more help now. So if he has more help, though, now he doesn't need to force it like he did against the Hawks. It's not a one-man show. He needed to do everything. So he has the help. He can defer a bit. Game one, he came out strong, and then Brunson took over. Game two, which was the shit show it was, and games three and four, after that big fall as well in game two with the not that dirty play from Jared Allen. By the way, I tweeted about this. I think at the end of game three, some random guy from the Cavs went for the dunk. The game was over, and Deuce didn't contest that. That's not being dirty. Throwing Julius Randle onto the floor is being dirty. But I digress. The Randle thing is, he's there. Yeah, he's obviously a guy. He's moving Mobley away from the underneath the basket. It's most of the rebounds as well. It helps in the rebound battle because it's Mitchell or Hartenstein against Jared Allen alone. It's not Mobley and Jared Allen against our center. And so offensively, he's there. He took 10 shots last night. He didn't play the fourth, but in three quarters, only 10 shots. That's so un-Randle-like. RJ and Brunson and even Josh Hart had a lot of shots. Josh Hart had 16 shots, the guy who's afraid to shoot from three. And I think that the main reason last night he was benched, it was not because of his offense. His defense wasn't great, but he only had two rebounds. He was not rebounding the ball. He was not using his body. And Obi Toppin had 8 rebounds. I think Obi who said it, I was doing the dirty work. I was doing the dirty work. So, yeah, I got those minutes. So that's the main reason. Obi played. He wasn't looking for the lobs. He wasn't looking for running the floor every time. He was doing the job that needed to be done, helping Mitch and Hartenstein to, well, dominate the front court that would destroy us. That would destroy Mitchell Robinson and Hartenstein. So, I mean, even if people talk trash about Randle, I think it's a mature thing of him showing maturity. Okay, I'm not 100%. These guys are cooking. Let them cook. I don't want the ball to get me going. I don't need to. It would be best if his shot was falling, but it's not. But we're still winning. I mean, our best player, because he's the two-time All-Star, two-time NBA, is scored 7 points, and we beat the Cavs. Well, third quarter of doom a bit, but other than that, it was we dominated the game again with less than 100% Randle. So I'm not concerned about him. We're saving him for the Bucks or the Heat. I don't who's whoever's next.
Now we got to the point of saving him for the next series. Look at us, man. You know, we're supposed to be a playing team. You know, look at us. I think that he is still, you know, impacted by this injury, which makes sense. You know, the timing of it was not great. You know, only 2 weeks before the playoffs started, and you know, you would expect that somebody would still be recovering. And honestly, you got to feel good as a Knick fan if you're at worst, second or third best player is going to be that that ineffective, and you're up 3-1 in the series. You know, that's an incredible feeling. And, you know, Rafa, you mentioned the Jared Allen play. So I also tweeted about that, and I called it a dirty play because you're up by 24 or whatever the hell they're up, and you know, and you hear him, I was like, oh, that was just a hustle play. Like when you're up 24, you know, the game's in hand, there's like 2 minutes left. You know, that tweet got over to Cavs Twitter, and they were having a field day on me. But you know, I still feel that way. You know, it's just like, I get there's like staying competitive, but you know, and I was so pleased the following game that Randle got to dunk on him, and Brunson just absolutely cooked him in the paint towards the end of the game, which was just a thing of beauty. But yeah, I mean, my issue with Randle, and you know, DP, I think you could appreciate this as somebody who grew up during the Ewing era, is the knock on Patrick by a lot of Knicks fans over the years is like, yeah, he's great, gets us, you know, wins a bunch of games in the regular season, can't win the big one, you know, and he shrivels in the playoffs, you know, he's not him. You know, Bill Simmons came up with the whole Ewing theory off of that notion, which, you know, is, you could make the argument like, yeah, you're not in that position without him type thing. Right. And my fear is that you're going now two series where he was ineffective against Atlanta. He's ineffective now. And it makes you wonder if that sort of Ewing level criticism is starting to creep in, where they're kind of saying, hey, you know, you want us to score a bunch of points, get a bunch of rebounds in the regular season, but when it's money time, where are you? Kind of a thing. And I hate that for him because I feel like it's circumstantial. You know, 2 years ago, when you really look at it, it was smoke and mirrors. You look at that starting lineup that we were getting thrown out there. You know, we're relying on, like, you know, Nerlens Noel to make big defensive stops. We're relying on Reggie Bullock to hit shots, you know, and it was just smoke and mirrors. It was just Randle feasted that year on hitting, you know, really hard shots. And then, you know, came into the Atlanta series, they keyed in on him. Nate McMillan was the better coach in the series, and Knicks out in five. And now he's recovering from an ankle injury. You don't know what percentage he actually is. And you guys said it, you know, he's not getting down low. He's not going downhill like he should be doing against a weaker, in terms of like upper body strength, defender in Mobley. And, you know, I hope he gets, if we advance, and I hope he is 100% into the next series so he can kind of redeem himself a little bit. Yeah. So I'm really just waiting for this big Julius game, you know, I need it to happen. As like the Julius Randle guy on this pod, you know, I need that to happen. You know, we've had a great Tibbs series. We've had a couple great RJ games. We just need the Julius game, you know? But on that note, let's talk about RJ. Let's get into before, it. So
before RJ, we do,
go ahead. Yeah.
Sorry. Just to let you guys know that Lauri Markkanen won most improved player. So,
man, that's crazy. Oh,
there you go.
Of SGA and JB. So if like in the way that I grew up thinking about the award, I think of someone who's like not that good that had a big jump. But I have no idea what the actual criteria is. I don't pay attention to these things.
Well,
but
we clearly know that the award criteria is very abstract at this point. Like we saw with Sixth Man as well, you know, where all of a sudden game started matters. So, you know, but you know, it's fine.
I don't think half the people that vote in these awards know what the criteria is. I think they just...
Yeah, well, your boy Zach Lowe had a funny anecdote about that. He's like, you know, if I'm stuck, I just pick about who a player I like more, and then I just pick him. You know? Right.
I love Zach Lowe.
RJ.
So Zach Lowe actually kind of spoke RJ's great playoff games into existence. You know, speaking of, you know, he kind of mentioned, where's the great RJ playoff game? He gave you two. So, So, DP, what do you think about what you've seen from RJ in these past two games? And has he really kind of had this moment now where he has solidified himself as like a key cog on a playoff team now?
You know, it's interesting. Like I was listening to Rafa talk about how, I swear this is about RJ, even though it doesn't sound like it. I heard Rafa talk about how Randle had to force it against Atlanta and he doesn't have to now. I don't even think that's true. We got smoked in game two because Randle didn't trust his teammates. I think game two was very much like the Atlanta series. And the reason I bring this up is to say that RJ's game in game four was definitely better than his game in game three. Mm-hmm. But the timing of what he did in game three is what I remember more. Like we were on the ropes. We played terrible. Randall was pathetic. We didn't know if he was healthy. We came through at the Garden. I was on pins and needles. And RJ from the jump took over that game. And I think it allowed Randall to remember that he could trust his teammates. And certainly RJ was off to the races. He's been great the last couple of games. I think that so Omar, I'm a Randall defender also. So I feel bad saying these things, but like I've given RJ a bunch of crap. And I think now it's like people say like, oh, if RJ always did this, I'd love him too. And that's what people said about Randall. So I feel bad, but I mean, I like RJ. He's a great guy. Like, I don't know who wouldn't like RJ. And I've always felt like playmaking RJ is the best version of him. And while he's finishing much better, somebody was posting to, I think maybe Prez, but that he's looking to drive more. Even on the drives he's finishing, if you watch his eyes, it looks like he's looking to pass. It's not there, and then he's going to finish. So I love this version of RJ. I hope this version of RJ continues. I hope it improves. I hope we keep winning. I hope we win a championship, blah, 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 blah. No, I'm not convinced that these two games from RJ means he's a part of the future or the number two option moving forward. I don't, you know, for fans, it's okay. But for a front office, for a franchise, I think people prefer a guy like Randall to an RJ in that, like, it's a long season. You can't just show up for two games. That's not real life. Now, confidence is everything in basketball. Can this catapult him into starting next season, getting off to a good start, having a great regular season? Absolutely. And if he does, it'll all change. But I don't think the best and brightest minds that are theoretically unbiased, I'm sure they're not, but that are theoretically unbiased, look at two games and say, oh, if this was true, we wanted to trade him, but now we don't. I highly doubt that's the case. I don't know that they want to trade him. I have no idea, but. So, no, I don't know if he's part of the future. I think for the Knicks organization, we need RJ to be great, either A, because he's great, or B, because it increases his trade value. So, net, this is all positive because he's great. And I will say one thing. For me, if he stinks it up, the next game, the next series, whatever, it's hard to win in the playoffs. And it's hard to be good in the playoffs, to your Randall point. To me, RJ has like a lifetime pass. Like he basically won two games for us. I know Brunson, of course, and Hart. But he's got a lifetime pass for me because I haven't seen many people be the best player on the court in Knicks playoff wins in my 40 years on the planet. So I'm not going to forget about these anytime soon.
Well, you mentioned about, you know, the possibility of him being traded. I remember it wasn't that long ago that Quickley was getting shopped about, supposedly. Right. You know, I don't know if this is a tactic by the front office just to get a player going, just to kind of, you know, get them worried about their place in the team on the roster. Certainly worked for Quickley. Maybe they're trying the same thing, Raji. I don't know. I mean, he was obviously part of that Mitchell talk, but you know, certainly Tibbs loves him. But as we've already mentioned, maybe Tibbs and certain people in the front office don't see eye to eye. So, you know, maybe there's still something brewing there. We don't know. But David, we've been getting on it, so many people at Twitter, about, you know, while the playoffs are going on, certainly while we're up 3-1, you know, there's absolutely no reason to get on to any of these players at the moment. You know, they just deserve a full backing, and that's trading and things like that has to be a conversation for the summer. You know,
yeah.
You know, while we're in this kind of fight, then it's just, you know, we need everybody, and it's just really sad to see everybody jumping all over the back of Randall last day or so. You know, actually game one, people were criticizing RJ a lot. And, you know, my common response was just, you know, that's a conversation for the summer. If not, if you're going to dissect his performance, do it tomorrow. You know, like this is one of the great wins we've had in recent memory, and everything should be focused on that. And, you know, even though he didn't even have that bad a game, you know, some people just see the shooting stats and think that's equals performance. So, going back to the game four very quickly, just near the end, I was, you know, literally screaming at the TV, and in type as well on our group chat, you know, that RJ should just be given the ball and driving it every single time. You know, you had Garland, you had Mitchell, you had Mobley all in foul trouble. RJ had it going from there. He obviously wasn't shooting well from the perimeter. He should just be driving, and at worst getting to the line. So thankfully that's what he did, and you know, it worked out beautifully for him. So yeah, just so happy. And happy for Rafa as well, because it takes some of the stress off him. You know, I know how stressed he's been with all this RJ hate, so it's good to see his guy get going.
I'm the RJ guy, but I completely understand about the frustrations that comes with him. It's a real roller coaster ride as well with him. It's the same thing. He's young. We all know about this, but he needs to be consistent to be part of the future of the franchise. I obviously I understand that it's not two games. It's not the last year from January until the end of the season, and he played tremendously. And I think that's why he gets so much stick from the fans. It's like people were expecting him to be this guy. And especially after game two, seeing Garland going crazy and seeing Anthony Edwards in Minnesota, they're losing, but he's scoring 40 points and 30 points. I mean, people are seeing these guys outscoring him because he's for sure. Oh, made the move, goes to the basket, misses. He's a constant thing of his, and so it's. I think I get it's infuriating, and you see a Garden. I don't understand. I don't believe that everyone that was in the Garden chanting RJ Barrett were all RJ Barrett stands. They were game two, trade this guy, send him to China, whatever, to Beijing. And now he has one good game three, and they're chanting his name. I mean, people are starved of him being great, being at the same level of the other guys. He's around Ja Morant at the same year that he was drafted or after him. So I understand that. Think about it, but obviously I was happy he finally found his offensive touch in this series. I think it tells a lot how he kind of game one he was good. He was very important game one when Brunson went down to foul trouble. Being able to penetrate and playmake, he was doing that side, and I don't understand how you stink up the place in 82 games of the regular season defensively. Like losing players, and then you get into the playoffs, and people no longer talk about your defense because you're playing very good defense. Not great, but very good defense. You're not losing guys. You're pointing at guys at defense to be where they are at their positions. You're pointing at quickly go there and quickly. Oh yeah, you're right. I mean, RJ Barrett is doing that in the playoffs. I mean, where was this? I mean, that's the frustrating thing, and I get frustrated at him when he. Especially with that, when he shoots a three-pointer, just stands there with his hand, the ball coming to him, grab the board, man. I screamed a lot of that. Game four, he came out great again, started out strong. And the important detail to me is on that game three, that first three-pointer that he shot and went in, I think that changed everything for the rest of the game for him. These two games at the Garden. If he shoots that first three and misses, the Garden is already, oh, there he goes again. But he hit it, and the Garden got with him, and he got it going as well. He was showing emotion at the end of both games. Something he scores buckets in straight face, but he was showing emotion. But he needs to be consistent. He needs to continue to be aggressive. Because I pointed this out today as well. In the second half, he fouled out. Basically, he fouled out alone, Evan Mobley.
Yeah.
Three straight fouls. He attacked, or he was getting fouls, or he was getting scoring the basket. So that's the guy we needed. He shot 13 free throws. He's getting calls now. What happened? I mean, it's I want more of this, basically. I have more of this. He can do this. Brunson can do it. Randall can do it. Think we're a much better team, but he needs what we need to do to have is the three of them working well together, because it's scoring points. I mean, RJ, Randall, and Brunson, we have a few games like that, or one was struggling, so we need that in order to for the front office to believe, okay, we can go forward with these three guys as a core. So if it doesn't work, I think RJ might be the guy getting traded to, well, someone who can shoot a three-pointer at least, which is big.
Yeah. I mean, look, the reality is there are haters. There are extreme Randall haters, RJ haters, you know, forget the haters, just the regular people who could be honest about conversations. As I appreciate you are even talking about how RJ's defense in this series has been good, not incredible or great, but it has been good. It's been much better than it was. The truth is Brunson, like in a team building sense, Brunson, Randall, and RJ and Mitch, that's not, it's just, it doesn't fit. It's actually not the right fit. So I think when I say that I think the front office may consider moving him, to me, it's not even anti-RJ. It's that IQ and Grimes, who may not be as good, who may never be as good, might fit these other guys better. It's just about who they end up choosing. And you know, you can only pay so many guys. But look, you mentioned that Anthony Edwards putting up points and Morant and Garland. RJ isn't sexy. He doesn't fake people out of their shoes, right? So it's just a different sort of player. And I think if RJ stays on the team, similar to Randall, the benefit they have is that, like, I think Rafa called Randall the best player a couple times, like, and then you have to qualify what you meant. The reality is Brunson's our best player. We all know it. We've just been trained to say Randall's the best player, and it's still hard to believe how good Brunson is. He's the best player and he's the leader of the team. I've called Randall the leader many times just in the last week. He's not the leader. Brunson's the leader. And so, Omar, I feel you on the Ewing theory, but the benefit that Randall has and the benefit RJ has is that they're not the best players
mm-hmm.
the way that Ewing was. And so, you know, if these guys have the potential to be the best player, I mean, we grew up on the same teams, but who are we really comparing them to? Oakley was a role player. All these guys that we love, they were role players, right? And
yep.
And so Randall and RJ, skill-wise, are so far above the mid-90s Knicks complementary players. Brunson's not Ewing. I'm not saying that. But if Brunson continues to get better, Randall and RJ as second and third options. Look, it was like, I don't know, 14 days ago that Quickly was supposed to be the third option, right? So there's a lot of talent on this team, and we're young too, so... we'll see.
Yeah, I kind of look at the RJ thing as, you know, going into this year, everybody's like, oh, the Knicks are two stars away, you know, and then Brunson did Brunson things. So like, oh, maybe actually they're only one star away. And you wondered who that would be eventually. But then the conversation has shifted to, all right, who's the third guy after Brunson and Randall? And RJ, these past two games, I feel like he makes a case. You know, he makes a case that he can be relied upon in that way, not just for the scoring, not just for the playmaking, but you mentioned it, Rafa, he played good defense in this. And, you know, in the playoffs, that's where you earn your keep, right? That's where you get that reputation to be that kind of guy. But at the same time, I do, you know, I'm not going to ignore the fact that, you know, stylistically in the roster fit, it's not great. But RJ has been asked to remold and unmold himself in this team multiple times since he's been a rookie. You know, he was drafted to save the franchise, but then it was kind of like, oh, maybe you're kind of like the Robin to Julius's Batman. And then this year, it's like, oh, you're going to be the third guy. And, you know, that's hard, you know, to go through all that stuff. But he kind of showed you that he was a number one ranked high school player for a reason. He's a number three pick in the draft for a reason. You know, there's a reason that people, because if you guys remember that draft, it's like, yeah, it's easy to look down. It's like, oh my God, Garland was right there, you know? But there was the consensus 1-2-3 with Zion Ja and RJ. And that was like that for a reason. He checks every single box you want from an intangible perspective and, you know, just a physical perspective in the modern NBA. Do I wish he could make a few more threes? Of course. We all wish that, you know, but he's had a pretty good series, all things considered, you know, but it's been the RJ Barrett experience. And you're hoping, mm-hmm. I think DP said this earlier, that he could take that and get into next year and have it become just a building block, because he's still only 22. And I know that's like the RJ fan thing to say, oh, he's only 22 years old, right? But he is only 22 years old. So yeah. I think a lot of fans want him to be Anthony Edwards. And he's not Anthony Edwards. And that's okay. He doesn't have to be Anthony Edwards.
Anthony Edwards doesn't have Brunson or Randle, you know. So.
Yeah, exactly. He has to be that. You know, he has to. Yeah. He's dealing with the negative suck that is Rudy Gobert over there in Minnesota. You know, no need to get into that.
Come on.
All right, let's. We've kind of mentioned this guy's name a lot up until now, but we'll get into him some more. Let's just talk about Jalen Brunson. You know, and I don't even have a question, DP. I just talk to me about Jalen Brunson.
Yeah, I mean, look, not like he was good, but I mean, I grew up watching Rick Brunson. Iron Man Tibbs was on the bench. Like it's all very nostalgic. There was that clip of JB dapping up Starks. I think it was game for me, right? Like just unbelievable Beautiful. Stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was happy with Brunson. I'm like a defer to the expert kind of guy. So like, what do I really know? I like the signing. I don't care about the contract. I can't spend months talking about how amazing Brock Oller is and then question people's contracts, right? Like, so try to be consistent. We had this great cap team. They said this is what he's worth. I'm in, right? Jeremy Cohen tells me it's descending salary and that's a sign they love him. Like, great, you know. So I was happy with that, but I didn't really understand how he would settle the team down. I didn't really expect it to be this way. And I also underestimated, you know, you watch these guys' highlight reels, like Josh Hart's a good example. You see when we traded for him, everyone puts out these threads about him getting a defensive rebound and then going the whole four and scoring a layup. And it's like, yeah, all right, cool. But this is a highlight. And then you see him coming, he's like, holy shit, this is like all the time. Same thing. You see this Brunson footwork and I'm like, all right, but this is a highlight reel. Right. And then it's just like all game over and over and over. Like they could have just made like a 50-hour highlight reel of just they condense into 5 minutes. So it's incredibly impressive. He appears to be getting better. I'm a little worried about his size. The Cavs happen to have a smaller backcourt. So I know we're more worried about his lateral speed on defense, but he takes a lot of charges. So I don't know, like as he gets older, as his body wears down or what, but he's been everything that I hope for and more. And I think, you know, Randle is the kind of personality type that's easier for Randle to defer to than I think if it was more like a type A in the lights, flashy, like stealing the thunder kind of thing. I think that might be a little harder for Randle. And even for RJ, I think it's fair to say him being asked to go, you know, he didn't just go from 2 to 3. At the end of last year he was 2, but people were saying he should be the 1. He almost went from like the first option, which never happened, but talk of the first option all the way down to the 3. Mm-hmm. That is a hard thing, but again, having a guy like JB be that person, I think, you know, while it may have mentally hurt him internally, I don't think there was like resentment, right? So the guy's incredible. He's our closer, and I think he's just a good dude, but we all see it, right? He's just like a good guy. Like, who could not like Jalen Brunson, you know? So you know, if I tried to find a negative, I'm not even sure that I could, honestly.
There can't be many players with better footwork in the NBA right now.
Incredible.
Maybe Curry, maybe, or like, but it's an absolute joy watching. I always love listening to Clyde, watching him, you know, in the commentary. You know, Clyde always dissects the kind of, you know, the point guards in the game, and you know, hearing him just kind of ooing and aahing, as he always says, you know. And yeah, he loves watching Brunson, obviously. So we've also been enjoying, David, the Rick Brunson coming off the bench during start of timeouts. I don't know if you've noticed this.
Yeah.
You know, in the highest pressure situations, you know, Rick Brunson just walks in, hands in the pockets, chewing gum, just looking like not got a care in the world.
It's one of the most fascinating things. Like, my oldest is 8 and I'm just a complete insane dad on the sideline. Like, it's fascinating. This guy could have any semblance of professionalism watching his son out there. Like, it's just crazy. I don't get it. It makes no sense.
Maybe that's the only way you can cope. You can just like try to basically go completely the opposite, you know.
Well, it probably has to do with how JB is so, you know, yeah, as well, right? It's family trait.
That's it.
I still can't believe that Dallas didn't want to pay him. It's ridiculous. The mistake. They knew the player. Even if he didn't want to stay, if they offered enough money, he would have stayed. I mean, he said he wanted to stay. So it's nobody expected him to be this good. And people were talking about how Donovan Mitchell was transforming into another in SGA as well, even if he's playing much better. If he's turning into a superstar, what is Jalen Brunson doing? He's carrying the Knicks team from out of the playoffs, not to the play-ins, but to the fifth seed, and he's doing it on the playoffs. If he is not becoming a big star, what else does he need to do? Obviously, continue to be this guy. But, I mean, he's clearly our number one option. And to talk about how RJ became the number one, it was almost number one, and it became number three. He played himself into that number three because he started so bad. He started, they wanted to be a mix of the three, but RJ played it out of that spot, and Brunson Randall played into that spot even more. So it was clear what needed to happen, and RJ took it. But Jalen Brunson, man, it's when he misses, I'm surprised. Everything seems like it's going in. I don't understand how every defender just stands up or is able to not fall on their ass when he starts dribbling and moving his feet. It's amazing. It's a beauty. And the shots he was taking, that shot in the third quarter to take us back in the lead, it was a tremendous shot. It was amazing. He's taking it into Donovan Mitchell 2 years in a row. His team is taking. I mean, if last year was impressive, this year is. He's very good as well. And it took a second round pick to get him.
Yeah,
I am very happy.
It's not just having a good point guard, which is everybody's been screaming about for years, but it's also just having a guy that you can rely on in crunch time as well. It's so comforting, you know, when your stress levels are through the roof, that you know you can just give the ball to somebody like that, and you know he's going to make the right play. So, and more often than not, going to get a good shot off. So. There's everything's been said about him, you know. He's just brilliant to watch, and you touched on it, David, as well, about his kind of off court demeanor. You know, he just seems like such a cool guy, and the bromance with Josh Hart is just
better than that.
Those guys need a sitcom, you know, like something for the off season. We could I'd watch it anyway.
You know. When you look at Brunson, you can't, and in this series specifically, you can't help but think of that, you know, the whole like Donovan Mitchell aspect, you know, the trade that could have been and all that. And Brunson for the second year in a row is just looking at Donovan Mitchell like he's food, you know, and just, you know, going at him, getting the better of him, up 3-1 in this series on him, where he's the best player on his team and Donovan's the best player on his team. And, you know, you got to feel happy about it if you're a Knicks fan, because to your point, Rafa, it only cost a second round pick for the tampering, right? You know, and as opposed to the massive haul that it would have required to get Donovan here. And, you know, he's a stabilizing force. He's everything. He's him, as Rafa's saying with his notepad right there. He's everything you want. Like a lot of times in the past before Brunson got here, last year, you would see Randall trying to do too much, maybe RJ trying to do too much, quickly trying to do too much, and you didn't have that stabilizer that was just going to come in and just say, all right, calm down, I'm gonna take care of business, I'm gonna close this thing out. And that's what he's done all year. It's what he's doing in this series, and I thank my lucky stars every day that he's our point guard, you know, because, you know, we haven't had it for such a long time, and I would argue we haven't seen this level of point guard play. I don't even know since when. I mean, it's just so such a relief, and you see, like, oh, this is what a good basketball team does to stabilize a position, you know. And like, we've done so many foolish things and tried to get this person or that person in at this position is such an important position, even in a wings league. You know, you still need a good point guard, and we have. So, you know, I think we're set up for success. I know the durability thing with his size is a concern long term, but you know, that's future problems, you know. Right now we're just excited about winning in a playoff series. I do want to shift over to, I hate to even call them unheralded or underrated. I want to talk about the centers, the combo of Mitchell Robinson and Isaiah Hartenstein. They've been excellent in this series, rebounding defensively. I wish Mitch could hit some more free throws, but they've been great. And I'm just curious, do you guys think that their play has been a big reason to why Allen and Mobley have been ineffective outside of, you know, the jitters of playing in the Garden and so on and so forth?
It's hard to say no to that, right? Players win the games and lose the games at the end of the day, not the crowd and the coaches, despite as much as we focus on that. So I think that's the case. I don't think Obi, personality-wise, Obi and Randall, I'm sure, are not best friends off the court, even though I mentioned that Obi roots for him and vice versa. Hartenstein, talk about the odd couple or the sitcom, Hartenstein and Mitch are actually best friends. It's insane. It, like, on the surface, makes no sense. But they love each other and they root for each other. And I think that helps too. You need confidence when you step on the court and you want to, when you cut, no one wants to come out of the game. They all, you heard Josh Hart the other night, right? Coach, if you even play 48, I'm good, right? Everyone, yeah. No one says that. Everyone thinks that. These guys don't want to come out. And so when you're pulled from a game and then you're pulled out for your buddy, and vice versa, I think that helps too. So these two are having a lot of fun. They're playing great. They have complementary skills. Like, I used to think, we used to sign these guys like Norman Pell and obviously Nerlens Noel. And it was like, oh, Tibbs wants 48 minutes of rim protection, right? Now, Hartenstein is protecting the rim, actually. He's had a few great blocks at the rim, but he has complementary skills to Mitch. Every other center under this regime has had it's just been redundant. The same guy, right? Lobs, no dribble, no passing, no shooting. So I think it's been great. I think the front office has valued high character people. And I think they thought about how to make this roster in a way that would work. Similar to how we talked about how Brunson wouldn't be threatening and whatnot. So I definitely think they deserve credit. I think Mobley's a kid. I mean, this kid's going to be a star. Like, I don't know how much it is them versus the first time around, but Allen's been around the block a little bit. And I definitely attribute what our guys have done to neutralize Allen directly on their shoulders. And Mitch has done it while talking shit. Like,
which is,
you know,
great.
Yeah. Incredible. Like, you know, every first time he said it, I'm like, what is this guy doing? Right. Like, this is why I get on Bickerstaff every day. Cause I think he's a clown for talking too much, but you know, Mitch is backing it up, man. So more power to him.
Yeah, I've got to admit to not being Mitch's biggest fan over the years. I feel like his developments, you know, I expected more from him development wise. Certainly screen setting, finding post moves. You know, not that I want him to shoot at all. I'm glad that we shut that one down. You know, just. But this last year or so, I've noticed a massive improvement. I don't know if it's, you know, he's settled down. He's got his contract, and it's just given him that extra kind of boost of confidence that he's made it in the NBA. And yeah, he's, you know, and Hartenstein as well. You know, I think we talked a lot at the start of the year about, you know, just needing that different option, that plan B with the center. Pairing because Noel and Mitch just provided too much that was too similar, and Hartenstein certainly does that. And yeah, he doesn't come as advertised with the shooting that maybe was mentioned when he was traded, but everything else he does give that different option to Mitch. So I'm just loving the way that the, you know, the two of them are working together, and just loving the way that they're just dominating the so-called the big two in Cleveland. So that came with all the hype. So, yeah, long may it continue.
I talked about the centers and the way they played all week long. Because I think it's been a massive win by the Knicks. And it's a very important stat. Just look at this last game. Jared Allen and Evan Mobley combined have had 11 rebounds. Mitchell Robinson alone had 11 rebounds. So alone, he gobbled them up. I mean, Mitchell has been playing tremendously. Hartenstein has been playing tremendously. And we're out-rebounding him. And the big thing is, we're a physical team. Even our guards, they guys like Josh Harden, especially, and Josh Harden, RJ Barrett, attack the paint. They use the body, so we're always using the body on them. And having your center in power forward playing around 40 minutes a night against the Knicks over and over again, I think it's criminal. I think the Cavs lost this series when they let Kevin Love go. It's as simple as that. I mean, it's ridiculous how they let Kevin
Love go. We've been all over that talking point, that their depth was just shot and they just bought him out.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And
yeah, maybe he wanted to go, who you know, try to do the right thing by him. Who knows? But I just want to, you know, oh, sorry. I just want to add to Mitch. I didn't want them to re-sign Mitch, by the way. So if we're going on the record on things, I didn't want to. And my logic was similar to yours. He didn't like, so RJ, the reason I was mad at RJ for most of the year is that he seemed slow, and he acknowledged he didn't pick up a basketball when he was negotiating his contract. So, you know, that's what happens. It's not like riding a bike. These are the top level athletes. If you don't put in the work, you know, it's not surprising. Like Mitch, I loved him, but he didn't seem to develop new skills, you know? So my concern was, if you pay the guy's not developing new skills, now we're going to pay him and he's going to magically develop the skills. And so I don't know that he's developed the skills that I was looking for him to do. He can't even set a screen, to your point. He certainly can't do it, but he's gotten better at the things he's good at. Mm-hmm. And I also think what's made him better, and I don't know if this is true, actually, maybe I'll just Google it, but I don't know if his minutes are down or not, but the fact that we don't need him for as many minutes because we have a center that we really like, I think is either helpful because it's keeping him fresh if his minutes are down, or at least just mentally not, you know, sort of knowing that we don't need to rely on him. The drop off previously was much bigger. So, but I mentioned Jeremy Cohen once earlier. You guys know who I'm talking about, I assume. Like, he talks about like keeping the soup going. So once he explained to me why you can't let anyone walk and you just sign him and you worry about it later, I got it from a cat perspective, but I didn't expect him to improve the way he did. So, and you know, kudos to him. And he's in the best shape of his life also, which is a huge thing.
Yeah, which he wasn't a year or so ago. When,
yeah. Right.
You know, when he put on all that weight, you know.
Yeah, when you're looking at these two guys, man, it's just like there isn't a drop off when one goes off and the other comes on. And that's been the hugest thing. Like a couple years ago, it was, you know, before Mitch got hurt, it was him and Noel. And then like Noel, like on offense, was giving you literally nothing, can't catch the ball, you know, and it was just a big drop off, even from Mitch. Hartenstein gives you like this passing element. He gives you still some shot blocking element. And obviously Mitch is just so great on the offensive glass. Like they both bring you different things, and they've made life hell for Mobley and Allen. And it shows. And like, you see these guys talking in post games, when his shook comment, it rings true. Cause they do look shook, you know, they look like they're bothered by it. And we know what Mitch is, you know, he's always been a shot blocker, offensive rebounder type of guy. But I really do credit Hartenstein for really adapting his game in the middle of the season. You know, it was kind of like everyone's like, oh, we got to stretch five, even though he only took a select amount of threes. But, you know, he turned himself into like a better rim protector. He turned himself into a better rebounder. And, you know, you got to give the guy credit for that. What a home run signing by the front office in the offseason. Obviously, Brunson's signing takes precedent to that. But, you know, Hartenstein was an excellent signing as well. Speaking of an excellent signing, let's close out on Josh Hart. You know, he's just been tremendous, started the game yesterday, and he's just been everything we wanted for him more. Very seldomly do trade deadline deals have this much impact, I feel like, unless you're trading for a Kevin Durant like Phoenix did this deadline. So, AP, what do you think about what we've seen from Josh Hart in this series and really since he became a Knick?
Well, first of all, he pounded my son before game four, who later had the game with an illness. So if we find out that Hart has strep and he's out for the next game, please don't throw rocks at my house. But it might have been our fault. So that, I'm just going to hopefully that not be the case. Hart's the man I talked about earlier. Like, you know, Starks, he's just like a real, no pun intended, but a heart and soul kind of guy. The one-man fast break, we're a very slow team. A lot of it's intentional. Tibbs thinks it limits our turnovers. If we play slower, we can set our defense. And he's a one-man fast break out there. It's unbelievable. Actually, it's amazing because he makes so many of them, but I still scream for him to pass to somebody on the wing when he gets all the way down the court. And he never does, and he always finishes it. And yet I'm still just expecting him to, like, brick it off the rim because he's going so fast. I don't understand how he's able to lay it up a touch. His shooting does scare me. Although he seems to make all those also. So I don't know, man. It's just unbelievable. But he's been great. And again, from a personality perspective, I was at the game before. I keep talking about being at the game. But him and Obi before the game are juggling the basketball. I don't know if I'll send you the video, whatever, I can DM you. But they're juggling the basketball together before the game. Like, they're just messing around, right? He's singing Don't Stop Believing. Like, it's tense out there, right? And someone talked earlier about how Rafa, about how RJ finally showed emotion. He doesn't really show emotion. Randall, if he shows emotion, is usually angry. Tibbs is always upset, right? It's like a serious team, man. Like a very, very serious team. So to add another personality that could lighten it up, I think that matters just as much as his play on the court does. And then the last thing is he started, I believe, every game for Portland before he was traded to us. So, you know, his skills on the court matter. His lightening up the mood on the sideline in the locker room matters. But the fact that from a pure personality type, it's like, start me, don't start me, whatever. Like, that's what teams need, right? They need guys who are willing to just go with the flow and adapt and not make it about himself. And like Brunson, he fits that mold perfectly. So it's been amazing. And again, you guys do these pods of time, so I don't know what your feeling was, and I don't want to like rehash a whole thing, but this whole Cam fascination thing was, as a Tibbs guy, you want me to tell you that Tibbs sucks because he doesn't play Cam? Like, so anyway, I feel like we got him for literally nothing, which is also another sort of icing on the cake there.
Yeah, we're not an overly favorable Cam pod. You know, we appreciated him, you know, sure. But sure. I just saw him as a role player. I wished him well, you know. I equally didn't like the jumping all over him, you know, when he played poorly in Portland. You know, just the guy's gone now, you know, just let him play, let him find his place in another team somewhere. There's no need for the hate either way. Yeah, just let's move on. And we've obviously struck gold in that trade. We talk a lot about, you know, the perfect, you know, Tibbs player. And, you know, that's, you know, he obviously is. You know, you heard Tibbs, you know, talking about him when he signed. You know, he clearly just loved the signing and he wanted him here. He's everything that he wants in a player. And, you know, that I think looking at, you know, the Cavs' performance in this series, I think, you know, the fact that we've built a whole kind of roster of guys that are Tibbs players, you know, guys that will just run through brick walls for the team. You know, they'll scrap, they'll hustle. And then you look across at the Cavs and you're just like, I don't see that player anywhere in their roster, really, to a certain extent, not in the way that the Knicks have. So that is what I completely underrated in this series, that, you know, that how much that would count. And that's what the playoffs are. And, you know, Josh Hart is the, you know, the perfect playoff player. He gives you everything that you want in a kind of playoff series. I actually just feel like, I was thinking about this today, you know, the fact that it's his first playoffs. I mean, what a waste of a player for all of his career so far, you know, that he's been playing on teams that are rebuilding teams and young teams. And, you know, these teams haven't seen, you know, the impact that he can make in a kind of playoff situation. So I'm so glad that he's finally getting his chance and, you know, he's flourishing in New York. So just an amazing player, amazing personality, just completely hard to not fall in love with him. So yeah, just awesome signing. So
I think we've talked throughout every topic. We ended up talking about Josh Hart. I mean, he's just loving life in New York. He's singing, like DP just said. He's braiding his hair with the New York, with the N and the Y. Like, he's enjoying life in New York, something that we didn't see players do for a long, long time. It tells about how the team is built differently. And he's just energy. And when he's on the court, he brings out the energy, and I think the rest of the players go with him. And that energy guy that energizes himself and the rest of the team, which is awesome for us. And it's been huge. It's coming off the bench, starting like he did. He's been tremendous. Let's hope we can keep him. And it's kind of crazy that this is his first playoff series. It doesn't feel like it. Feels like he did this all along forever. So yeah, man, he's great. I hope he continues the Knick for forever, basically. Just that simple.
Omar, can I just real quick, Rafa, you mentioned the braids, so I don't, maybe you guys know this or not, we all see the same stuff, but so his uncle was the first African American Yankee, and so it is NY, but it's actually, I'm a Mets fan, so it's annoying to me, but it's actually the Yankees NY symbol. But we talked a lot about the character of all these players today. So Hart's uncle was a professional athlete, Obi's dad was, Deuce's mother, I believe, Grimes' brother. You go down the list, RJ's father. I think everyone, Jericho Sims has a relative also. IQ's mother was an Olympian. I think if you go down the list, it's Mitch and Randall are the only two players. Even when they signed Trevor Keels, I quickly went to his Wikipedia and I saw that he had some connection to a professional athlete. So they definitely have a certain type of player that they're trying to acquire, and Hart's just the next person in that mold. So
yeah, that's a really good point, especially when you think this front office, because they didn't originally bring in Julius and Mitch, that was kind of the previous regime, and they're looking for a certain type of guy, and Hart, though, he seems like a guy who just was like meant to be a Knick. And I have no interesting analysis about it. It's just like gut feeling. This guy just looks like he was meant to wear orange and blue for forever. And you guys all mentioned it. It's a shame that he was, left to be on these lottery teams. And, when he is so clearly such an impact player in the playoffs, and he's shown it, as the start, no problem. Coming in off the bench, no problem. I know he has his contract coming up. He's expiring. He has a player option, but I know a lot of people are saying that he's probably going to decline that and negotiate something to stay here because he loves it here, loves playing with his buddy Jalen, and he loves winning. He's in the playoffs. Why wouldn't you want to stay, unless a higher level contender was going after you type thing? But yeah, I'm just happy he's here. He's meant the difference in multiple games so far this series, and if the team advances, I'm sure he'll be a big factor in the next series. But I want to kind of close out this episode just real quick, guys, going around the horn. What game do you think, what game do you think this series is decided? So DP, will start with you.
I think game five, their shot. Rafa sent a great clip of Jared Allen talking about the defense was good. And then he's like, oh, maybe it wasn't. I don't know if you saw the clip of Donovan Mitchell, but he literally, like, his eyes, how my kid looks when he's just finished crying. Like, he literally looks like he just finished crying. I think these guys have no shot. They're five. Sorry, five. The answer.
Okay. Yeah, I'll agree with that. I'd say I'd be very surprised. I mean, obviously, they've shown they're capable of reacting after game one, coming out and having a with the crowd behind them, they have that in them. But as you say, I think these last two games have just taken the wind out of them. And there was a couple of times in game three and four where it just looked like they'd given up. I think now's the time just to get this one sealed out and get Randall right for the next round.
I'll be shocked if we don't have a game in this series, the Donovan Mitchell game, like the Donovan Mitchell win for the Cavs. Hmm. If they really are completely shook and they go down 4-1 to the Knicks, the Cavs have much deeper problems to solve. Because, what happened there? You're the fourth seed. Kind of feels like the Knicks when 2 years ago when we played the Hawks. Like, when you're down 3-1, I feel like you have to take game that fifth game, but some pride. Just okay, we made it two games. The game at home, normally it is like play some pride. So I said all along, Knicks and six. Even as that scares me now of thinking about it too much. If they take game one, another game, they might get a little energized, but I'll still believe Knicks in six, but I'll be relieved if Knicks in five. So I don't mind missing the prediction.
There you go. I feel like I agree with you guys. The Cavs just look like overwhelmed, overmatched, exhausted, cooked, whatever you want to use. I think very good chance the Knicks take care of this in game five in Cleveland. Even like I have this strange situation where I follow a lot of Knicks fans on Twitter, but I also actually follow a lot of people in Cleveland. Some years ago, a bunch of them followed me or something. So I get to see the Cavs perspective too. They are so done with this series. Like Cavs fans have just, you know, after the loss in game four, they're like, yeah, this is done. You know, we're through. You know, they're not, and some people are like, well, you know, you never know. And you're like, no, it's over. We suck. They had, you know, we can't match their intensity. We can't match their toughness. We can't guard Brunson, you know, the whole thing. And when it's that resounding and that loud, and you mentioned EP, seeing the way Donovan Mitchell looked, he was about to cry. Jared Allen's like, oh shit, I guess we do suck defensively. Evan Mobley is the most timid interview I've ever seen in my life. You know, it's just JB Bickerstaff saying things to say things, you know, it's all like the writing's on the wall that this series is over. I think there is an outside chance that, you know, they bring it to six just to get, you know, close it out at home in the Garden. But
yeah, of course, awesome.
Yeah, that would be nice, right? But yeah, I think this series looks like it's in hand for the Knicks, which is great, and we'll get to look forward to the next round. But that's gonna wrap us up this week, DP man. Thank you so much for joining us. Wealth of knowledge, which we knew we were getting into because we all follow you on Twitter. So thank you again for joining us this week.
And I follow you all. It's a lot of fun. I'm just a fan like everybody else, but your show's great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Go next. Yeah,
awesome. So make sure to follow DP at Captain Pearl NYK on Twitter. That is all caps. Don't know if that matters with it, but I think you'll be able to find them real quick with that. Make sure to follow us on Twitter as well at WWKnicksPodcast. Make sure to subscribe on YouTube. Hit that bell icon to get notified when we post new episodes. And make sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. On behalf of Rafa, Alex, and DP, thank you guys so much for tuning in for another episode of the Worldwide Knicks Podcast. Knicks in five, baby. Let's get this W. See you guys next week.